widely abused by migrants.
Asylum abuse also strains our public school systems, our hospitals and local shelters.
The Trump administration also introduced a rule this week that makes legal immigration harder for people who require public assistance. Critics say the new rule is discriminating against poor people. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Rights advocates have already announced they will challenge the Trump administration's new rule in court. More for you on VOAnews.com. I'm Liz Pelka, VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, the UN says measles cases in Africa are up by 900% in the first 6 months of this year. And a court in Malawi has sentenced three people to death for killing an albino. We'll have these stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story, Zimbabwe is tense as the main opposition MDC alliance calls for a nationwide strike tomorrow. The government has, in response, initiated a violent clampdown on those suspected of backing the action. Adigando has more on the story.
Early yesterday morning, suspected state security agents abducted and tortured MDC Alliance youth chairman from Fakose, Blessing Kanotunga, as he slept at home, according to the Zimbabwe Human Rights Forum. In another incident, it reports that six men armed with AK-47 rifles abducted and tortured Tatenda Mumbiarara, a human rights activist. The forum says both incidents are meant to intimidate the opposition and its supporters. Political analyst says the government fears social unrest as a result of the economic crisis. The country has been marked by daily price increases of goods and commodities such as fuel, electricity, and government services. Making matters worse, runaway inflation and massive government corruption is compounding the problems being experienced in the country. All this is despite the insistence by the government that things will change for the better. Hopes of a turnaround have long faded, as observers say that there is very little left to lose but to stand and fight. Leading human rights lawyer Doug Cotard comments on recent developments.
It seems to indicate the beginning of another crackdown similar to what we saw in January with respect to now to this march on the 16th of August, and we are likely to see similar use of torture and abductions going forward. So as human rights defenders, we have to be extra alert and ready to respond.
With the country gripped with a spiraling economic crisis, the plight of citizens is becoming more desperate by the day. Economic mismanagement and corruption has reached endemic levels to a point where the ruling party has begun to release its own list of alleged corrupt party officials. Critics say the real problem underpinning the government's economic mismanagement is the ruling party's predilection for violence and its arbitrary use of power. The government says it is undertaking reform measures and has hired Washington lobbyists to have sanctions lifted on specific individuals. But observers say recent developments entrench the view that the wholesale systemic change is needed.
Is sad in light of the government's rhetoric saying that they're turning their back on violence and seeking to portray the demonstrations as the demonstrators as being violent, whereas you know the opposition have made clear that they seek to hold a peaceful protest, and in fact the violence is being meted out by the regime, it seems.
The opposition MDC Alliance maintains that despite acts of government suppression, the protest march will go on as scheduled tomorrow. The government on its part is warning the public of a violent clampdown. The ruling party's political commissar and deputy defense minister, Victor Temadanda, is on record as issued threats against dissenters and those involved in the planned protests. The opposition wants the ruling party to agree to a national transitional authority to implement key reforms ahead of the 2023 elections. Observers say ordinary Zimbabwean citizens only want to improve their lot. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
The UN Health Agency says measles cases in Africa are up by 900% in the first 6 months of this year as part of a global rise in the preventable disease. It's the largest percentage increase in the world, although other regions also have suffered increases. A major contributor to the global jump was Madagascar, which the World Health Organization says is turning things around after a large rise earlier this year. The Democratic Republic of Congo also has seen a dramatic increase. WHO says measles is almost entirely preventable with two doses of a safe, highly effective vaccine. Those who are not covered, it warns, are at risk of serious illness, disability, and even death. Tunisia's Electoral Commission has rejected 71 of the applicants to run for president and approved 26 others. Those rejected can still appeal the ruling. The official list will be issued August 31st for the September 15th balloting to fill the vacancy caused by the death last month of Beji Said Essebsi. Among the approved candidates are Prime Minister Youssouf Chahid, former Premier Mahdi Juma, the Vice President of the Moderate Islamist Party, Ennahda, Abdel Fattah Mourou, and Defense Minister Abdel Karim Zibidi. Also in the field are former President Moncef Marzouk and Nabil Karoui, owner of the private channel Nesma TV, along with two women. Among those rejected was openly gay lawyer Munir Batour. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Twelve past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe is tense as the main opposition MDC alliance calls for a nationwide strike tomorrow. Tunisia's Electoral Commission has rejected 71 of the applicants to run for president and approved 26 others. And the UN Health Agency says measles cases in Africa are up by 900%. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A court in Malawi this week sentenced three people to death for killing an albino. The sentence came after the court found them guilty of a gruesome murder in which they removed the arms and legs of a victim in 2015 in the belief that the body parts were magical. As Lamek Masina reports, not everyone believes the death penalty will be an effective deterrent.
Malawi's courts have long been accused of giving lenient sentences to people who attack albinos, a development believed to contribute to the persistence of the attacks. In a report released May, Amnesty International said that 22 albinos have been murdered in Malawi since 2014. Judge Esme Chombo, who issued the death sentence on Tuesday, said the penalty will act as a strong deterrent to others and help stop the attacks. Mark Bottoman is the government spokesperson. He told VOA the government is pleased with the court verdict.
We are glad that something is being done, and we're very grateful to judiciary that they're moving towards this direction. We hope that the kind of punishments that have been meted by the courts will be able to deter those that have evil motives, to attack or abduct or kill people with albinism.
However, Edgar Nyongolo, a constitutional lawyer at Chancellor College of the University of Malawi, believes that death sentences cannot deter attacks if cases take a long time to conclude. He notes the case that wrapped up Tuesday took about 5 years.
If the swiftness is not there, if the people know that...
Kanyongolo says if swiftness is not there, if people know that in this system, if we go to court today, we'll go to court 10 years from now, it has no deterrent. Malawi has a death penalty law on the books, but there have been no executions since the country switched to a democratic government in 1994. Instead, convicted murderers remain in prison for life. Rose Msope is the project officer for NGO Human Rights for Girls and Women with Disabilities. She says in the absence of executions, the death sentence will remain useless in deterring attacks on albinos. Msope says there are times when the president pardons some of the prisoners. So should the pardon happen to those convicted for killing albinos, that means our security is still at risk. Albinos, who lack the skin pigment melanin, stands out in Africa and are targeted by so-called witch doctors who use their body parts in rituals and potions that are supposed to bring good luck. The government has tried to debunk the claims, and in June 2016, a judge issued a ban against what he called witch doctors, traditional healers, charm sellers, fortune tellers and magicians, and ads for their services. Malawi's Albino Association praised the ruling, but traditional healers said they would fight it, saying they are not involved in magic or murder. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Egyptian Foreign Minister spokesman Ahmed Hafez said Egypt believes the solution to the Libyan crisis shall be exclusively Libyan and agreed by all Libyans with no interference or dictates from external parties. The spokesperson stressed the need for all Libyan parties to declare their categorical rejection of foreign intervention in Libyan affairs. Egypt praised the humanitarian truce declared by the Libyan parties on Eid al-Adha, describing it as a step in the right direction towards the possibility of building confidence between the Libyan parties. However, General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army, rejected attempts to extend the ceasefire in the capital, Tripoli. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Mufta Tayar, former Libyan ambassador to Mexico, about the Egyptian position towards Libya.
The foreign intervention in the Libyan issue is a very serious and important matter, and considered to be one of the main reasons that prolonged the situation and makes it worse. Egypt itself is accused of intervening in the Libyan affairs, not to mention also Turkey, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates. And the intervention takes different forms, political, military, and other interventions. What the Egyptian spokesman said is right, and everybody is calling for that. Please take off your hands of the Libyan. But do they really mean it? Do these countries are responding to this, including Egypt? I don't think so. As far as Egypt, for the Egyptian government, I think it should work more to get respect and trust of the different parties engaged in the situation in Libya, not a particular party, and also open a dialogue with them. With this dialogue, with this openness to all parties, Egypt can gain respect and trust and can play a role. Other than that, it's going to be just another power that intervening in Libyan is there without any respect or trust.
Can you explain why the international community cannot so far pressure the two sides to reach a ceasefire?
History taught us that ceasefire and truces won't be effective unless there is a, on the land, in Libya, for example, a military power that's supported and respected by all parties. Without this, the ceasefire is not going to be successful. And in fact, in the Libyan case, the matter is even more difficult. There is a fighting in the West there is terrorists in the east, and until a couple of days ago, there was an explosion. And also in the south, there are mercenaries and fighting in the south. So if the international community do not know this, and also do not know that Libya is a huge land, everybody now in the fighting in Libya thinks that he's going to succeed and he's going to be victorious. And to convince him to respect a ceasefire, it's going to take time.
Jonathan Cohen, the permanent representative of the United States to the United Nations, urged Libyan parties to cease military activities, saying all parties must take permanent steps to remove and limit violence and protect civilians and civilian infrastructures. Would the United States push for achieving such a goal?
The direct answer, yes. The United States can play a role. I urge the United States government to play a more positive role and to engage more in the Libyan conflict, but not alone. The international community, especially the European Union, and also those who are interfering from outside in the Libyan matter, also they should be brought to the table and they should move toward the same direction with the United States. The United States can put pressure on different parties and can use their influence for bringing other different parties that they are not now, in fact, are willing to play a role in this. But unfortunately, the different fighting parties got used to that and got used to ignore these calls. And also, they don't even care about the consequences.
That was Mufti Tayyar, former Libyan ambassador to Mexico. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Kenya and Somalia are in a territorial argument over part of the Indian Ocean, with Kenya threatening to send forces to the disputed area and Somalia's parliament wanting military action to prevent it. As Mohammed Yusuf reports, some analysts warn tension could rise as a United Nations hearing on the disagreement approaches.
Kenya's parliament is calling on President Uhuru Kenyatta to send troops to the Indian Ocean to protect the country's territory from what it calls Somalia's aggression. John Badi is a lawmaker in the Kenyan parliament.
In the event that diplomacy is going to fail and any other process fails, then our constitution permits the use of Kenya Defence Forces to protect our boundary, and the authority to use Kenya Defence Forces is vested in parliament. The president can declare war or use our forces to protect our boundary, but deployment of those troops must be sanctioned by parliament. So we were told the executive that parliament would support any means to protect our territorial integrity.
The threat by Kenya comes less than a month before the UN's International Court of Justice holds a hearing on the dispute. Somali lawmaker Mohamed Omar Talha tells VOA his country will counter Kenya by sending in troops of its own to the 100,000 square kilometer area. If they send their troops to Somalia, we, the Parliament of Somalia, will also bring a motion that will counter such a threat and give permission to our soldiers to defend its people and territory, Talha says. The Parliament decision will work. The two neighbors' maritime dispute began in 2014 when Somalia filed a complaint against Kenya in the International Court of Justice, saying it had exhausted all other avenues of finding a resolution. Kenya wants negotiations with Somalia, while Somalia insists the court process must stop before negotiations take place. Mwachofi Singo is a security expert. He says a conflict between the two countries would benefit the Al-Shabaab terrorist group.
Catastrophic. Nobody wants to worsen an already bad situation, because the security situation in the Horn is already not good. You have Al-Shabaab roaming around everywhere, you know. We already have, Kenya is already part of the AMISOM. group that is fighting, Amisom force that is fighting Al-Shabaab inside Somalia. Now, if you open another front of instability because Kenya and Somalia cannot agree on their maritime boundary, this can only give, can only fan the fires, you know. In fact, I think Al-Shabaab itself would celebrate.
Mumo Nzau teaches diplomacy and international studies at the University of Nairobi. He says the military threats are a political statement.
Well, those are just, you know, some kind of political statements by politicians, and they are normal, but that cannot be, you know, the official position of the country. It is just positions that politicians take once in a while. But there is nothing like moving troops, and there are no troops at the disputed area for any reason. And these are matters that the United Nations Security Council and the African Union are observing very closely, and they're working very closely with the two countries.
Kenya troops are part of an African Union force fighting Al-Shabaab militants and supporting Somalia's internationally recognized government. The hearing on the Indian Ocean dispute begins September 9th at the International Court of Justice headquarters in The Hague. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Botswana is battling an influx of illegal immigrants from Zimbabwe, which is suffering from a deep economic crisis. But authorities in Botswana appear to be losing the battle, as those who are deported are soon back in the country. Mokandisi Dube reports from Habrone.
Prosper Kandanamo and Thomas Kundani left Zimbabwe and entered Botswana illegally because of the moribund economy in their homeland.
I came into Botswana because back to my home in Zim, there are no job opportunities.
The two are among the many illegal immigrants from Zimbabwe who line the streets of Habrone looking for odd jobs. But they are an unwelcome sight for authorities and subject to frequent police raids. The number of Zimbabweans arrested and deported in Botswana rose from 22,000 in 2015 to nearly 29,000 in 2018. Kande Namo, an accountant, says they are often caught.
It's better for you to be caught by the police at the cells. They'll give you food, they'll give you transport to the border, they deport you, then you find your way back here than to go back to Zim.
Kundani, a painter, says they would rather risk arrest than return to face hardship in Zimbabwe.
You just have to come back. The situation here, it's a bit difficult. It's difficult for us, but as compared for the situation in Zimbabwe, it's more worse.
Botswana citizens like Mohamed Mkhashane say illegal immigrants contribute to rising crime and are demanding a solution.
Now turn back today, tomorrow they're here, because there's nothing to hide. There's nothing they can put them to stay back where you are taking them. Always they'll come here because they know that there's a fruit here where they can enjoy a day and they can be in plan for something.
Illegal immigration will persist as long as Zimbabwe's economic crisis is not addressed, says Habron-based analyst Lawrence Ogeditse.
For so long as economic and other opportunities are not quite there, people are going to move and you can't stop them from moving. It's not a nice thing to go through a border hunted with guns and all those things. But if you see people doing this, then it says to you that the cost of doing it is actually higher than the cost of staying.
Botswana spends about 100,000 a year deporting Zimbabwean illegal immigrants. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habrone.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Aiden Ochku, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable.
Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC.